Tatmatantra Bhagavan.
Tatmatantra Bhagavan.
Vikridatyatma Mayaya.
Vikridatyatma Mayaya.
Vishijhavayitha
Mayam.
Udaste Shakshivad Vibhu. Tatmatantra Bhagavan. Vidatyatma Mhayaya. Vishijhava Yathamayam. Udaste Sakshi Bhadvibhu. Yatha. As Atmatantra, independent. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, Vikridati, enjoys his pastimes. Atmayaha, by his internal potency. Vishajha, giving up. Va, as also, yata, as he desires, mayam, the external potency, udaste, remains, sakshivat, just as the witness, vibhu, the Almighty. Translation. The independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency and at the time of annihilation gives them up to the external potency and he remains a witness to it all. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fountainhead of all other incarnations, is the only independent person. He enjoys his pastimes by creation as he desires and gives them up to the external energy at the time of annihilation. By his internal potency only, he kills the demon Putana, even though enjoying his pastimes in the lap of his mother Yashoda. And when he desires to leave this world, he creates the pastime of killing his own family members, Yadukula, and remains unaffected by such annihilation. He is the witness of everything that is happening, and yet he has nothing to do with anything. He is independent in every respect. Maharaj Parikit desired to know more perfectly, for a pure devotee ought to know well. Om again to the Nandu Satan and the Namasaka Chakshulam in Tanina, Sashi Namaha. So here, one of the questions by Prigit Maharaj, and Srila Prabhupada finishes his purport with this statement that Maharaj Prigit desired to know more perfectly, for a pure devotee ought to know well. So, of course, this is one of the qualifications of the pure devotees of the Lord, that unlike those who are materially motivated in their approach to religion, they want to properly understand, you know, the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why he does things, you know, what it means to us. Persons who are materially motivated, what they do is they search out within religious scriptures enough information to authorize their material activities. And you know, from that point on, they're satisfied. They'll look no further. That you know, once they have found somewhere within the vast body of religious scriptures, whether it be, you know, within the Vedic literatures or Christianity or the Muslim religion, they find that which seems to indicate that their materialistic activities that they are performing is a very highly religious activity, very pious activity, and that therefore they can just simply absorb themselves in those material activities and not really inquire any further into religious principles. If such persons can't find the statements that they're looking for within one religion, then they will go to another religion. If they cannot find what they're looking for within the Vedic scriptures, then they will search it out in the Christian religion. If they cannot find it there, they will search it out you know, in the Muslim religion. If they cannot find it there, they will go to Buddhism. Somewhere or another, they will find what they're looking for, and when they find that, then pretty much the rituals that they perform, the you know, daily worship, the meditation, the religious activities they perform and condone really remain limited to that which they have sought after, you know, to seek out their authorization for their material activities. You know, just to give an extreme example, when I was in Perth, there was we used to distribute. This was in 1980. We used to distribute a lot of books in the mall, and there was a very strong contingent of born again Christians. Do they call them that anymore? Or they sort of, they still call them. They might have given themselves enough bad publicity to call themselves something else, but anyway. So they were very disturbed that the Hare Krishnas had come to Perth to, you know, spread Krishna consciousness, and they were determined to drive us out. And what they used to do, they were very, very tricky. So there might be, you know, two or three of us in the mall distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and they would try. They would come up to us and they would ask us a question, so that they would take up 2 or 3 hours of our time. You've probably experienced that, right? Those who distribute books, they don't care about the answer. They know that if they argue with you for 2 or 3 hours, then that's so many books not distributed. And so you could never, there was never any, you know, end. So their questions like this, they're not asking you as a pure devotee, they're asking you simply to stop the book distribution. And, but they were also already convinced, you know, although they were asking so many questions, they were already convinced of their conclusions without having read the Bhagavad Gita, or, you know, by just flicking through to find something that they could argue with us about. So, you know, there was one person come up to me one day, one Christian. He said, Krishna is a demon. And I said, no, that's not correct. He said, yes, he says so in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, and we were distributing some other books that day, you know, Prabhupada, Leelam Reader, and Coming Back, something like that, some small books, some Bhakti Godheads. So I didn't have a Bhagavad Gita on me, and I said, well, you know, there's you come back tomorrow and you show me. I'll bring you Bhagavad Gita. You come back and you show me where Krishna says he's a demon in the Bhagavad Gita. So he came back and I had the Bhagavad Gita and we flicked through. And I think it was in the 10th chapter. And he said, you know, amongst the daichas, the demons, I am Prahlad. So of all the statements that Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita, he found the one that suited his mentality. And he was not going to look any further than that. And he was convinced. Krishna says he's a demon, he's a demon. That's it. That's what we always thought. Now he said it himself. So, like that. And that was the end of his Bhagavad Gita studies. He had no further questions to answer. But I'll tell you another little story about that. Is that how determined they were to prove their conclusions of the Gita. So they were convinced that Krishna is a demon, and us Hare Krishna devotees, we're all demons as well, and we deserve to be driven out of town. So it wasn't just a philosophical argument, they were convinced. One time we were distributing books, and they did their trick where they come up and talk to the devotees. And, because we're all young devotees, while we're all talking to them, they stole all their books. They run off with all the boxes of books. And we're like, no, where's the books? Oh, they're gone. We couldn't work out where they went. And then just after that, we were staying in one house that we used to... we had a house in Perth that was our temple, and we all lived in that house. It was just an ordinary house, but had some extra bedrooms. We all lived in there, the whole temple. And one night, the brahmacharis, we slept in the front room. There was myself and Savaksha, who is a Prabhupada disciple. He's no longer with us. It's another story. But we were lying there, and of course Perth was it was a very hot night. So we're in our sleeping bags, just lying there in our coffins, trying not to disturb the mothers too much. But pitch black. It's just one of those dark nights. And when I woke up early in the wee hours of the morning, and I thought World War III had happened, because it sounded like there was just explosions just going off all around the house. I thought people were throwing hand grenades, and I thought, oh my goodness, what is going on? And I put my head up out of the sleeping bag, and I saw Savaksha. I just saw his legs and his copings, from about his copings down to his feet, just sort of getting sucked out of the window, front window. I'm thinking, oh my God, there's a monster out there. It's like, there's... So I just wake up and I just see this brahmachari with his, coping just disappear out of the window, screaming his head off. I thought, what is happening here? I was being a big, strong, brave brahmachari. I quickly jumped up and hid behind the curtains. And I was trying to, what is happening here? What is happening? Like that. And I looked out the window and I see Savaksha running down the street in his copings, screaming his head off, chasing all these people away. And I thought to myself, oh, I'll just quickly run outside and help him. But then I think I ended up climbing out the window or something, for some reason or another. But it was lucky I did, because what they'd done is they had also smashed broken bottles on the front porch and the back veranda. So, you know, if you run out barefoot, it would have just cut your feet to pieces. It was just broken glass, you know, big shards of like broken bottles, just covering the whole thing. And anyway, he came back a little while later. Some days later, they must have felt a bit bad, so there's a little tinge of Christianity there. And they brought back all the stolen books and you know, sort of apologised at that. But, you know, they were quite determined. They were quite convinced that we were basically, you know, the devil's advocates, and that at that, and that this was confirmed by our own scriptures, and, you know, they didn't have to look into it any further than that. It wasn't just like a philosophical difference, you know, they lived by this to the extreme. You know, what to speak of, you know, materialistic people. You know, they only have to find the slightest authorization within religious scriptures that, you know, either they just, you know, throw the whole lot out altogether and just, oh no, I found some contradiction, therefore, you know, that's it. They're all useless, you know, all the saints and sages and all the scriptures of the world. There's one little contradiction there. They're all going out. Like that. Or they'll accept them to, you know, make a farce of being a religious person and just accept those little pieces here. But actually, a pure devotee of the Lord, they do things in, not like that. They're like Maharaj Brigid. They actually want to know properly about the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his you know, past times and how they relate to us, what we can derive from them, what the Supreme Lord is trying to indicate to us. You know, again, in this day, and of course in any age, people always look for signs. You know, people always, they want to do something, and, you know, they're always looking for some sign. Oh, you know, the universe will show me some sign that, you know, she's the right girl for me, or, you know, that's the right horse to back, or, you know, like that. And that, you know, they'll get some, you know, a flower will fall from a tree, or, you know, a bird will pass stool on their head. You know? Seriously, you know, if a bird passes stool on their head, it's like, that's it, I've got the green light, you know. That's the good luck I've been looking for, you know. Have you heard that one? I know a lot of people like that, yeah. It's like they hang around under trees, you know, waiting for the good luck to fall. But, you know, they're looking for some sign. But if you show them the Bhagavad Gita, oh, there's a few signs. Oh, no, there's nothing there for me. You know, I prefer the bird droppings. You know, I read the Gita, I couldn't get anything out of it. But a bird passed all on my head, you know, I saw the light. So, but actually, you know, and you know, the archaeologists as well, you know, they're looking for answers. You know, they're just digging up the ground everywhere, all over the planet. You know, they find a little bone somewhere. But again, you show them the Gita, there's a few answers in here, oh, I can't see anything. So they go to so much trouble. But actually, you know, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, he's not just giving a few vague signs, you know, throughout creation, but he's personally speaking and answering every question and performing pastimes that everything you could ever want to understand about our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's just personally spoken it and demonstrated it. So in the Bhagavad Gita, You know, we have this word atmamayaya, you know, that he appears, that's in the fourth chapter, right? Who knows that verse? The atmamayaya. Yep. It's close enough, yeah. Anyone want to add to that? What's that? Yeah. First line. Who's atmamaya? What's it? You know, it's the first line. And sambhavami yuge yuge. That's the last line, right? Okay. It's four. What? Five?
Six?
Six? Yeah. So he describes there that he appears, you know, by his own spiritual potency. So, you know, there Krishna says himself to Arjuna that, you know, I have appeared, you know, it's not an ordinary birth. I have appeared here by my spiritual potency. I'm appearing in my eternal form. It has nothing to do with the material existence. So he's revealing to Arjuna that he's just completely independent. He's the independent personality of Godhead. He's not under the influence of the material energy. And he describes in the Bhagavad Gita that he shows his Vishnu form to Arjuna, the universal form. Generally, those in who try to understand the Hindu of Vedic philosophy, they think that all that they know that all the incarnations appear from Vishnu, and Krishna is displaying that Vishnu is appearing from me. Therefore, all incarnations are appearing from me because even Vishnu is appearing from me. Therefore, he is completely independent. He is not appearing because as a scheduled incarnation. Under the personality of Godhead. He is the personality of Godhead, who is the source of all incarnations who appear under his independent will. Parikit Maharaj here is inquiring about that, and then, you know, as the Srimad Bhagavatam expands, we see how Krishna manifests those pastimes. So therefore, even on the lap of Mother Yashoda, as described in this verse here, he is enjoying independently his pastimes, his loving pastimes with his devotees. He's enjoying the Vatsalya Rasa. So many other wonderful rasas and leelas, and even though great and powerful demoniac forces are trying to disturb him, even, you know, he remains undisturbed, and simply while he's simultaneously enjoying the pastimes with his mother, he kills the Putana demon by sucking out the poison and her life air, and in this way, killing her, but without disturbing his pastimes. You see, in Vrindavan, so many demons, they come to disturb Krishna's pastimes, and it doesn't disturb his pastimes. He's always happy. He's always very enthusiastic and playful, and it actually, he just, if anything, he controls that situation in such a way that it actually becomes pleasurable for his pastimes. Therefore, you know, all his friends, you know, it adds to the excitement. They go out into the forest. They enjoy watching Krishna kill, you know, various demons, and then they they come home and talking about all the wonderful activities that they perform. So he is completely independent. He's acting as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we also see that when Krishna, that Mahavishnu, he's not just acting as we said, one of the incarnations, but he is the source of all incarnations. All incarnations, all expansions, all manifestations of Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva are actually expansions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And this was shown in the pastime where Krishna and Arjuna went to see Mahavishnu. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he showed Arjuna, he showed him his Vishnu form. I am the source of this Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu. This Mahavishnu feature, because Krishna showed his universal form, that universe is all the universes we understand it coming from Mahavishnu. And therefore, after showing the universal form, he also showed the Mahavishnu form. From Mahavishnu, all these various universal forms, the various universes, unlimited universes, they're coming from him. And I will show you, Arjuna, that Mahavishnu is there within me, and because Mahavishnu is within me, and all incarnations are coming from Mahavishnu, therefore all incarnations are also within in me and appearing from me. Therefore, I am the source of all incarnations. And then he demonstrated that. He demonstrated that. In Dwarka, one brahmana, his son died. And after that son died and sort of disappeared, gradually the brahmana accused Krishna and Balaram and the Kshatriyas, how useless they were. They could not prevent such an activity. Gradually, after so many, gradually after 10 sons were taken like this, Arjuna was ready to enter into fire, because he promised that if I cannot save your next son, then I will enter into fire. And so Arjuna was actually ready to enter into the fire. And so Krishna, in order to save Arjuna, he took Arjuna and they went all the way to the end of the universe, and to the place where Mahavishnu resides in his spiritual abode there. And Mahavishnu admitted that it was I took them. Krishna understood. They went to different places, and then gradually they understood. It must be Mahavishnu. We've been everywhere else. And yes, Mahavishnu admitted, I took them. Because Mahavishnu wanted to see Krishna. So wonderful is Krishna's eternal form and qualities and activities, that Mahavishnu wanted to see Krishna. But it also shows the rarity of seeing Krishna, that unless Krishna authorizes, even Mahavishnu cannot perceive Krishna's form. Unless it's authorized. Therefore, only Krishna is completely independent. He showed that generally think that it's the other way around. The Mahavishnu is the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna is a subordinate incarnation. He appears sometimes under the will of Mahavishnu. But actually, in this pastime, we see that Mahavishnu, he wanted to demonstrate to the whole world that it is very, very rare, it's very difficult even for Mahavishnu to see the form of Krishna. So he was prepared to disturb even the Brahmanas, because of course Vishnu, one of his, in maintaining religious principles above all things, Krishna maintains Jagadithaya, the whole universe, and all living entities within all the unlimited universes. But first of all, he maintains the Brahmanas and the cows. First of all. Then, by maintaining them, then his next consideration is maintaining the whole universe. They are maintained by maintaining the Brahmanas. That they are the first consideration. Here, though, Mahavishnu was so keen, so excited to see the form of Krishna, that he was prepared to disturb the Brahmanas, which is basically, you know, he is maintaining all the religious principles by looking after the Brahmanas. And to see Krishna, he was prepared to disturb the Brahmanas, taking away his son. So, of course, one may question that, as Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti the Kaur points out, and Śrīla Prabhupāda mentions this in his Krishna book, the commentary by Viśvanātha Chakravarti the Kaur, that Mahavishnu, because actually Krishna's associates in Dwarka, no one can disturb them. So not only is Krishna independent, but those who associate with him, his devotees, are also independent, because no one can disturb them also without Krishna's sanction. Therefore, Mahavishnu, he couldn't send some of his associates, either you go and take these, you know, Brahmana and sons. He actually had to personally go to do that. Krishna didn't actually go. Krishna still didn't have to go. Even though Mahavishnu personally came to take the sons of the Brahmanas so that Krishna would come to him where he resides and he could see, you know, Krishna's form, even stealing the sons of the Brahmanas could not make Krishna appear to him where he was on the causal ocean. Therefore, he disturbed Arjuna, because Krishna never went there to, you know, get back the sons in order to, that somehow Mahavishnu had tricked him. He went there just to satisfy Arjuna, just to protect Arjuna. So that pastime reveals that Krishna, his form, his activities, his pastimes, supremely worshipable and completely independent even from Mahavishnu, who is considered to be the source of all incarnations in this world. So therefore, by Krishna's words and by Krishna's pastimes, you know, he proves that he is the independent supreme personality of Godhead. And therefore, what he speaks in the Bhagavad Gita should be taken note of. See? Generally, people will look to the Vedic literatures and think, well, there are so many instructions. You know, we follow, you know, there's, we have Dattatreya, we follow some of his instructions, and, you know, Vamana said this, and there is Satyanarayan, and because of the Satyanarayan Puja, I mentioned that before, very, very, very popular these days. That I'm finding out more and more about that. The more people ask me to do these Satyanarayan Pujas, we went to the other week. It's very, very, very popular. Right? You've heard about them? Anyway, they have, it's spoken by Sudha Goswami. And it's from one of the Puranas. What's that? I don't know what that hand's going. There are five little stories that if you worship Satyanarayan, which is once a month, I think, on the full moon, right, so it's a monthly thing, although, you know, that's for those who worship Satyanarayan regularly, otherwise they might just do it once a year or once when there's some special occasion. And they read five stories. You know, the stories are how someone worshipped Satyanarayan and they become very, very wealthy. They become free from their, you know, sinful reactions. All their desires were fulfilled. Ultimately, you know, they, you know, within these stories, you see how those who worship Satyanarayan have all their material desires fulfilled. Those who don't have all sorts of problems. And then if they perform the Satyanarayana puja, all the problems are solved again, material problems. And ultimately they can achieve liberation, which for the Vaishnavas is really just another material desire being fulfilled. You know, Vaishnavas, pure Vaishnavas, don't consider liberation to be necessarily a spiritual goal. It's just that when someone becomes frustrated trying to enjoy in the material world, they want to achieve liberation and just get out of that suffering. So it's not that they I love God so much that I want to go back to the spiritual world. It's I'm suffering so much, if I can put an end to that by becoming liberated, that would be one. It's, you know, so it's like that. So, but that's the extent of it. That's the extent of their studies of the Vedic literatures, those five prayers. You know, whenever there is an auspicious ceremony, you know, housewarming, this or that, you know, they want to do, they read those five prayers, sing one song. Beyond that, there is nothing. There's like this void, you know, around there. And, you know, if you read those prayers, you not get an understanding of the Supreme Personality of God. There's very little about even Satyanarayan. It doesn't describe his form. You know, it doesn't describe, you know, his abode. It doesn't describe, anything, really. There's no rasa. There's very little. There's just, a few little, you know, you do the puja, basically it says you do the puja, you'll be okay in this world, you'll have a nice big house, you'll have a nice wife and husband, children, everyone will live happily ever after. And, you know, after some time you'll become liberated and you won't have to, you'll be out of the cycle of birth and death. That's it. As far as the whole rest of the science of, you know, that may be there within the Vedic scriptures, there's no... So the problem is that by somehow relegating Krishna to just one of the many, many unlimited incarnations of the Lord, we don't have to read the Bhagavad Gita. We can just, there are many incarnations, why not just choose this one? You know, we want to, you know, have a nice house with lots of, and if you read these prayers, it says you'll get that nice house, nice wife like that, and in the end you get liberated. Well, that suits us, so we'll pick this incarnation. You know, this incarnation says you can, you know, or if you pick, some of the, is it in the Ramakrishna movement, they have their incarnation. If you pick that incarnation, you can also eat meat. And, but the incarnation where Krishna says, you know, this material world is a place of birth and death, you won't find anything in here but misery, and, you know, you should try to develop your love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which begins with surrender, and give up all your other nonsense, and your nonsense religious practices, and just surrender unto me, and you know, that incarnation is the last incarnation they're going to read his books. So they replace, but Srila Vyasadeva, who compiled all the Vedic literatures, he particularly indicated that if you were going to read one book in Kali Yuga and leave aside all others, it should be the Bhagavad Gita. Because after compiling all the Vedic literatures, he compiled the four Vedas, he wrote them down, and of course you have all the Upanishads, and you know, then you've got the... he compiled also the various Puranas. He compiled the Mahabharata because he knew that in Kali Yuga, people would have this cheating propensity, even for religious principles, that they're just going to, you know, and they're very lazy. You know, they'll just read as much as they can to find what they're looking for. And even if some, but if someone says to them, look, don't even bother reading. Just do the Satchinarayana Puja. Oh, okay. I won't even bother reading it then, because so-and-so, a friend at work, you know, he looks like a really nice guy. He said we should do this, and we've been doing it ever since for about 10 generations. You know, what have you. Very, very lazy. You know, Vyasadeva knew this, that so he thought, if I can take the main things they need to know in Kali Yuga and just put them in one book, and I'll sort of surround it with all sorts of wonderful history about, you know, wars and love and romance and intrigue and what have you, it may attract them, you know. And if they could read that one book, everything they need to know is there in the Gita. This is for them in Kali Yuga. And even Sankaracharya says the same thing, even for the impersonalists. He says that basically all the Vedic scriptures, you know, just like a cow eats grasses from, you know, all different various, you know, parts up in the hills and down in the valleys, and there's so many different herbs and what have you. And it takes all the essence of all those herbs and grasses and transforms it into milk. So Lord Sri Krishna has milked all the Vedic scriptures, and the Bhagavad Gita, so all the Vedic scriptures are like that. They're like the form of the cow, and the milk is the essence of all those Vedic scriptures. Krishna is the cowherd boy, and Arjuna is the calf, and therefore the milk is of the essence of all the Vedic literatures is flowing. That part you should take. In Kali Yuga, don't bother trying to, you know, somehow personally extract all the essence of the various grasses and herbs and what have you. Just take the milk. You know, this is in any age you should do that, but especially in Kali Yuga, you really have no option. So Srila Vyasadeva is indicating that, you know, under the instruction of Radha Muni, you read this one book, the Bhagavad Gita, you'll understand about karma, you'll understand about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you'll understand about the living entity, how the living entity is in, you know, conditioned by the three modes of material nature, under the, potency of the time factor, which is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead as revealed by Krishna to Arjuna. If you understand those five principles, then you can make sense of everything. You know, if you don't understand properly how why a person is taking birth according to associating with a particular modes of material nature, you've got no real idea about why people are reincarnation or how they were reincarnated. If you don't understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead sits there as the witness, observing all our activities, our desires, and then, you know, how will we understand properly how we're being forced to take birth in different species of life according to our karma and according to how we're associated with the modes of material nature? If we don't understand that, we'll have all sorts of strange conceptions. And if we don't understand that we are being forced to die and take birth again and again and again by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have no idea how important it is for us to actually surrender to Krishna and get out of that cycle. Because people think, I'm in this world and this is my leela. You know, I have some, you know, I took birth like this, I had some desire, you know, I must have been my previous life, I must have wanted to experience this, you know, sort of life. And, you know, this is like my pastime. And, you know, in my next life, I think I'd like to be a butterfly, or I'd like to be, you know, go to the heavenly planets, you know, like this. So, you know, they're imagining, you know, that they're somehow creating, you know, just by their will, by their desire and their prowess, they're creating their next future. They don't understand. But if there's no go-rupture, if there's no protection of the cows, you're eating, you know, cow's flesh and committing all sorts of sinful activities and creating vana sankara, unwanted children, everything you imagine is going to happen in your next life or this life or your future will not come. Instead, you just experience repeated birth and death. Therefore, a person has to learn what are those activities I should perform that is pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which will guarantee that I will not suffer the results of sinful reactions in my next life. One should actually learn that, not just concoct them, imagine them. That understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita. And if we don't inquire into that, you know, a person feels it, you know, pretty much, look, you know, I'm really intelligent, I'm a bit philosophical, I'm quite a religious person, you know. As far as I'm concerned, if I'm a good family man putting food on the table, that's about as religious as you can get. God's going to really love me for that. You know, we served up some, beef and mashed potatoes tonight. Excuse me, Krishna. But, you know, I'm a good father. I'm making sure they're well fed. You know, surely God can see that. I'm just making sure the kids are well fed like that. And, surely he'll see, you know, I'm such a great religious personality like that. I really mean well. God's not going to punish me for that. But actually, you know, one can imagine one's own religious principles, but if one reads the Gita, one will understand, no, if you do something, just like you touch fire, you will get burnt. You know, you associate with the material mode of ignorance, your life will be suffering from start to finish. You associate with activities in the mode of passion, you'll get some mixed good and bad. If you associate with the mode of goodness, you'll be relatively peaceful, but you'll still be caught in the cycle of birth and death. But if you surrender the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you'll attain his eternal abode. And he is the witness and he is the judge. And he's sitting neutrally. Here it's describing that how do we understand that God sits as the judge, he's neutral, and yet he comes into this world as Krishna and does all these pastimes as if he's involved in this world just like one of us. That makes it even more difficult to understand. Even if they accept the Bhagavad Gita, and they're thinking, okay, I do accept the principle of the Bhagavad Gita, and I accept Krishna as the witness and the judge and the supreme lord, the supreme controller. But then I see that he comes here and he's fighting, you know, and he's killing his own family members, you know, and it's like, how to understand he's a neutral witness and at the same time he's completely involved in all these activities that appear very human-like. So Maharaj Parikit is asking that question also. How can he be the two people? You know, we can understand that Vishnu is that witness, completely neutral. He sits beyond the material world. He's just observing. And Krishna is saying, I am he. And he's showing this, you know, illusion of the universal form of that. But it couldn't be the same person because we see he comes here, he's enjoying, you know, he's running around with his friends, he seems to be a lusty boy, you know, having all pastimes with the gopis. It just, how is it possible he's that same person? But Krishna shows, yes, he reveals the universal form, he performs the pastime of visiting Mahavishnu, he performs so many pastimes to show, I am that Supreme Personality of Godhead, completely independent from all, from even Mahavishnu, from all other incarnations, they are all dependent upon me. Therefore, when Krishna went to see Mahavishnu, he went in his Naranarayana feature. And many of the pastimes that Krishna performed, the various incarnations who all reside within Krishna, they, some of those different expansions, perform various pastimes on behalf of Krishna. Because that. So he showed that. At the same time, we will see, so why does Krishna appear to perform these almost contradictory pastimes of being like one of us in the material world? And that is described in the 10th canto, when we read the 10th canto, that he performs those pastimes to show, here is a picture of the spiritual world. It is not without variety. It is not when you go to the spiritual world that God just sits there still witnessing. Or you've come to the spiritual world, I'll be watching you. I see you. It's just, you know, God watches us in the material world, we get to the spiritual world, and he just watches, he sits on top of a hill, just watching. He's got the hill, you know, it's like the you know, Lord of the Rings, you've got that eye there, you know, I can see you. Frodo. No, you can play with him. You can, you know, love him in a variety of different rasas. And that love is not like the love of the material world. That love is the pure love without the slightest tinge of material sense gratification or material lust. So therefore Krishna, even though he at the same time he acts as the witness, the sanctioner, the independent neutral Lord, and while he does that at the same time, he is, if you want to be his friend, he will be your friend, he will be partial to you, and he will play with you and perform all sorts of different pastimes like that. So, Prakriti Maharaj is asking these questions, and gradually, Sukadeva Goswami, very, very expertly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he answers these questions for us. So I'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments, no, I'll just back yourself in. Yes. That's a good question. So the question is, just in case you didn't hear, that you know, it's described as saying that, you know, there is only need for one scripture, Bhagavad Gita, and then Srimad Bhagavatam also says there's no need for any other literature beside the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is because where the Bhagavad Gita leaves off, Bhagavad Gita takes us to the point where we can understand all those five factors of, you know, we are a spirit soul, the Lord sits as the witness, the controller, he also resides in his personal form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he resides in the spiritual world. He is the controller of material energy, and, you know, he is controlling our karma and our next birth. So we understand all these factors, we understand. The best thing for me to do is surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by doing that and learning to love that Supreme Personality of Godhead, I can solve all the problems of material existence and experience the, you know, my eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. So then that leaves us with many questions, you know, that, you know, I want to surrender to Krishna, so I want to know more about that Supreme Personality of Godhead who I'm surrendering to. What we know about his activities in relationship to the material energy, And, you know, just, you know, something in relationship to the spiritual energy. But let me understand more completely, thoroughly, as far as possible, his relationship, the Supreme Lord's relationship with the spiritual energy, you know, with the living entities and, you know, how the material, the spiritual world is manifesting and how those activities are, you know, are manifesting and how those spiritual manifestations appear here also in the spiritual world. You know, if I surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up all other duties, how do I act? What do I actually do? You know, what are my spiritual activities? There's the question that Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that, you know, he understood. So now, you know, being liberated, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you ask the question, who am I? You're my eternal servant. So then, understanding that, one becomes liberated. That's liberation. Liberation means you understand, I have no material identity. I am the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I have the same spiritual quality. That's liberation. Sanatana says, now the liberation is there. What do I do? What is my duty? What is my activity on the liberated platform? So there are many questions like that, which are then explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is, in fact, you know, a continuation of the same teachings, but really it's when Bhagavad Gita takes you to the beginning point of spiritual life. And from that beginning point of spiritual life, everything you need to know is explained fully in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says that the thoughts of my devotees, you know, they're always dwelling in me, and they're always enlightening one another and in transcendental bliss, you know, conversing about me. So that instruction, how do you, you know, if you're going to be conversing about Krishna and his devotees and his pastimes every moment for your entire life, what do we talk about? That is actually, you know, there that the Srimad Bhagavatam gives you all that discussion. Yes, let us. That's what we can converse about Krishna so much. So it is a, you know, one is always thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna. So these, the Bhagavad Gita, where it leaves off, it gives you instructions and you can literally execute those by understanding the Srimad Bhagavatam and always being absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavad Gita is like an introduction, an introductory book, the ABCs to the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's the one teaching. Let's put it that way. You know, we say two books, but the one teaching. But you know, it also, you know, in that statement, we can also see something else, that if you were going to read one book and read the Bhagavad Gita, you may spend many lifetimes just trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita. You know, it's not saying go to the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it may take persons many, many lifetimes. And we see, you know, of people who study the Gita, how many people understand the Gita? You know, even within the Vaishnava Sampradayas, in this day and age, not previously, previously in the Sampradayas, they understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that was accepted. Now, even in the Vaishnava Sampradayas, what to speak of in Hinduism in general, and people from other religious scriptures, they don't even understand the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita, that you're not this body, let alone understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all incarnations. You get these great pundits on the Bhagavad Gita, and they're teaching, basically they can't understand how Krishna elevated Arjuna beyond the bodily platform. They're studying the Bhagavad Gita and they've still on the bodily platform of their understanding of religious principles. Therefore, Gandhi, you know, he's trying to, you know, promote that the Gita is supporting nationalism. Now, what is nationalism? Nationalism means I think I'm this body, I am an Indian. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is supporting my bodily concept of life, which expands as nationalism. So he hasn't even understood the very first lesson of Gita. And if you ask people generally about, you know, do you know Bhagavad Gita? Yes, I've read Gandhi's commentary. And so they're also, if they're, all those who read Gandhi's, and you know, the people who read many of the editions, you know, of Gita, which is not as it is, they can't even rise above the bodily concept of life, the materialistic concept. They have no access at all to the Bhagavad Gita, and it will take them many, many hundreds of lifetimes. So therefore, if there's one book, you know, at least first understand Bhagavad Gita, which is significant in itself. Put aside all your other books and just try to understand that. And if you do that, then that is an extremely rare achievement, even for very elevated, religious, spiritually minded persons over many hundreds of years. And then naturally, if a person actually understands that Bhagavad Gita, then the extended teachings are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They will naturally just read the Srimad Bhagavatam because it actually fulfills the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. What's that? Yeah, so then Prabhupada says like the Bhagavad Gita is like entrance, education, right? Entrance. Is, you do that exam, it means that, okay, you can go to higher education, graduate. You can graduate, you go to graduate sort of education. And Srimad Bhagavatam is like that, you know, graduate, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they're like postgraduate, you know, very, very elevated. But it's the same teachings. That's right. Krishna was Brahma was bewildered. He couldn't. It was very difficult for him to understand Krishna. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes Brahma's life. He lives for, but Krishna says, you know, even up to the planet of Brahma, there is birth and death. Therefore, you know, Krishna shows he is the time factor, who is causing birth and death, destroying everything repeatedly for all living entities, even up to Lord Brahma. So it shows in the Bhagavad Gita there that he, even Brahma is not independent. Even Lord Balaram, yes, Lord. He is the independence, he is non-different from Krishna, but we do see in that pastime that if Krishna desires that even Balaram, who is Krishna himself, cannot fully, you know, be privy to, you know, Krishna's you know, activities, plans. So, you know, this is you know, this is very mysterious that Krishna can be. That's what we're saying here. It's describing that Krishna can be the independent, neutral witness, and at the same time, he can perform all these pastimes, and also he can be the independent, supreme, all-knowing Lord, and at the same time bewilder himself that he cannot understand what he's doing in the form of Balaram, you know, and you know, so. He is completely independent means that you cannot say he can't do anything. That means there is a higher power than him. If you say, that's completely contradictory. Yes, and he can do that. You know, therefore the question is asked that, you know, can God make a mountain so big, so heavy that even he can't lift it? Yes, he can, and then he'll lift it. So, you know, you can't imagine, conceive, in all of your eternal existence, something that Krishna can't do. Even bewildering himself and at the same time remaining unbewildered. That is because he's completely independent. There's no other force acting upon him that, oh, you can't do this. The more we absorb ourselves in hearing about Krishna, the more we love Krishna, and then you don't want to be independent, you actually want to surrender in love. That's it. That's it again. Oh, we should have probably had any Krishna.